Here with you all. Let me organize myself just a little. And while I do, she mentioned in my bio that I'm on staff with Crew, and we have a variety of life coaching resources that I get to promote and I get to use. And so I was asked to share some content from the one I use the most. I think it's my favorite one. It's The Significant Woman. So I'm going to share some content from there. But and there's some men's versions back there on the table. If you want to flip through them when we're done, you're welcome to go back there and flip through them. But I also want to tell you about this one. This is also a life coaching tool, very similar to Significant Woman. Significant Woman is for the woman who has already begun a relationship with the Lord and wants to grow deeper in that and wants to understand how he created her and what he created her to do. And so I love it. It's fabulous. And then this one is for the woman who is interested in understanding more about Jesus. She hasn't begun a relationship with Christ yet, but she wants to know more about it. But it's a life coaching resource, and so she'll walk away with some great tools and some great principles that's really helpful in managing her life and exploring why she was created and what she's gifted at and what she would enjoy doing. So these are great. So this one, we're going to start a group on the 12th of April. And so if you're interested in that, there's a little flyer back there you can pick up as well. It's got my number and my email address in it, so if you thought you might want to do that, that would be great. We'd love to have you join us. So anyway, it'll start April 12th, and it'll finish before the end of May. So not too many weeks, about 7 weeks, actually. But anyway, wanted to tell you about that. Okay, and then the Significant Woman one. We build it on biblical life principles, and we use the acronym PEARLS to help us remember them. I'm going to talk about the first PEARL principle, which is called Pursue Your Uniqueness, and because it highlights your worth and it highlights your uniqueness. So I'm just going to share something from not the whole chapter, but just the beginning of it, just to kind of whet your appetite for possibility of being in a group. So anyway, I'm going to work from, I'll put this here, but I'm going to have to grab it. I don't want to put it on top of the computer. It'll throw things off. If I laid it there, would it? Okay.
Just move it like this.
Okay.
Just put it down here.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's what I wondered, if it would throw things off. But no, it doesn't. Okay, didn't want to. It's just so beautiful. That's the other thing I wanted to say. This is lovely. You guys have done a fabulous job with making this room so comfortable and so welcoming. It just, you know, the moment you walk in, you're like, I want to be here. This is really sweet, so thank you for doing that. Okay, so the first PEARL principle that I would just want to share some with you is called Pursue Your Uniqueness. And this is a principle that renews your heart. And each chapter introduces one of the principles, and it introduces questions that are kind of the outline. And so I just want you to hear the questions, and we'll talk about the first one. So the questions are, what makes you worthy? And the answer is, God gives you worth. And then the second one is, how are you unique? And the answer is, God created you uniquely. And the third one is, how do you pursue your uniqueness? And the answer is, you discover your uniqueness. And this chapter is full of tools that help you dig into thinking about who you are, life experiences, skills and abilities that you've acquired, close friends that encourage you. It looks at your spiritual gifts. It looks at your personality. So it's just full of stuff where you're digging in and learning about yourself, which is really encouraging. So hopefully it renews your heart. So worth and uniqueness are the two things that we're looking at. It says, you are unique. God created every part of you, his creation. You is something of great worth to him. God's initiating an intimate love for you, and that's the foundation for living a life of significance. So that's where you are. So the question is, what makes you worthy? And the answer is, God gives you worth. So every woman has worth because God lovingly created her. When you enter into a relationship with God through Christ, you begin to experience the fullness of your worth and uniqueness. So you guys received a handout, and so we're just going to follow that. But I just have an illustration that I want to share with you. So this is a $50 bill. Can you guys see that? Yeah, everybody see that it's a $50 bill?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So who would want this? You would want it? Yeah. You would want to. Yeah. So why would you want this?
It's valuable.
It's valuable. Yeah, what would you do with it?
Spend it.
Yeah. You would spend it, absolutely. So you would like this. Okay. So now it's all balled up. Is anybody still interested in having it?
Yeah.
Why are you still interested in
it? Still valuable.
All right, so it's all balled up, and now it's been tossed aside, and now it's been stepped on, and I don't know what is on the bottom of my shoe. So now you can be pretty sure that if it wasn't already dirty, and it was dirty because it's money that's been changing hands. But now it's really dirty because it's been balled up, it's been crumpled, it's been cast aside, and it's been stepped on. Does anybody still want it?
Yes.
Yeah. And why would you want it? Yeah, it didn't lose its value, did it? So the similar things happen to us. We get balled up in life. We get crinkled. We get ruffled. We get abused. We get shoved aside. We get rejected. We choose to make mistakes and do things. Others do things that injure us. We get dirty. Do we lose our value? No, we don't. We do not lose our value. We don't. I'm going to put this here, and somebody's going to remind me to get it. Before. Well, on your handout, I really wanted to talk about some reasons why you can know that you are valuable. Three reasons that you can know. One, you're made in God's image. Well, let me open this $50 bill and see who's on it. Who's on it? Do you guys know?
No.
Grant.
No.
Grant is on it. So it's got his image. Got his image, which adds value, I guess, to the $50 bill. But you have God's image imprinted on you. So think about that. What value does that add for you? And then the verses are there. You can read them on your own. But then the second reason is you were skillfully formed by God. And that is in Psalms 139. You were formed. I just love it that this is a mom's group. And some of you are expecting, or it wasn't that long ago that you had the baby developing inside of you. And you could do nothing but experience that your belly is growing and feeling the baby kick and move. But there was nothing you could do to get inside there and shape the baby and make them what you wanted. God was doing that in secret. And he's done that for you. You were formed in your mom's womb. And I love that it says, all the days that were ordained for me when yet there was not one of them. God had already written about them. He already knows what each day will hold. So that's pretty special, that you were valuable because you're made in God's image. And then two, he formed you. And then three, you're worth dying for. And that's what our Savior did. In Romans 5, but God demonstrates his own love towards us, that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. So in the book, it tells us, there's a statement that says, it talks about the broken images of us. We're no longer perfect like we once would have been before the fall, before sin became in the world. And so we don't see things clearly. And when we reflect to each other, we don't always reflect the best to each other. Others could have conditional love, or their preferences, or their values, or their view of power, or their view of themselves. And that gets in the way of reflecting the real and beautiful you. But God's view of you is unconditional love. It's not based on performance. He loves you just because you're you. And he always believes the best in you. And he accepts us just as we are. So God is the best reflection of who I am through God's eyes. So if we continued in the book, it would take us to look at Psalms 139 all together, and we'd walk through. And that's a powerful, wonderful chapter in Scripture. So I encourage you to read it, but I also encourage you to get in one of these groups and do it with one of these groups. So, but for our purpose today, I want to look at some parables that Jesus spoke. And they're called the Lost Parables. And they're in Luke 15, 1 through 32. So I don't know if you have a Bible or if you can open it on your phone, or if you can just listen as I share parts of the passages, then we can work through that together. And remember, we are looking at this passage to see what God thinks about you, to see what's the reflection of you that he sees. And his is the most important. His is the most important. So let's look at that together. So we're gonna start at page one, and at verse one, and I'll start to read it for you. So it says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him, to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." They were offended that Jesus was receiving sinners. So Jesus told them some parables that kind of really speak to what he thinks about people, particularly the tax collectors and the scribes and other sinners. So let me just read the first little parable here. It's called, it's the parable of the lost sheep. So he told them this parable. "What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after that the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost.' Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." So what a beautiful picture of God's love. He has 99 sheep that he puts away safely, and then he goes to search for the one. And he cares about the one. And who knows how far and wide he had to go to find them. Were they stuck in a brush, and he needed to free them? And then he picks them up and he puts them on his shoulder. And he's rejoicing. He's already celebrating in his heart because he's connected with that one sheep that was lost. And then he brings the sheep, and then he calls his friends, and he says, "Celebrate with me." And then he says, "There's more joy in heaven." So he's taking that illustration of the sheep, and he's pointing to how much God celebrates, the angels celebrate, when one person begins a relationship with Jesus, when one is found and he celebrates. So the next parable is the lost coin, and it follows the same pattern with something being lost and then rejoicing. And I like this one because it's about a woman, and I love Jesus' heart for women. And so this is a woman having 10 silver coins. This is verse 8. If she loses one, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it. And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost." Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Don't you like this? I mean, I had a pair of earrings, not these, but I had a pair of earrings that earlier in the winter I had lost, you know, and probably because you have a mask on and you have scarves on and, you know. And so when I got home from an event I'd gone to and was ready to take off my earrings, there was only one to take off. And I really like the earring, right? But you know what I didn't do? I didn't sweep my house. I didn't go looking around. I didn't go back to the car to see if it fell off in the car. I put the one earring down. I used the bathroom, got ready for bed, and went to bed and went to sleep. So, but this woman, she swept her house until she found this coin. So later, I did look out in the morning, and it was on the sidewalk, and I just grabbed it. So I still have that earring. But it wasn't that valuable to me. But this coin was. And to the hearer at the time that Jesus is telling this parable, they would recognize that it was valuable. And so the woman found the coin, and then she gathered her neighbors and friends to celebrate finding the coin. And then it talks about how the angels are celebrating over one sinner. So then the third one is the last parable in that we're going to look at, and it's longer and it's more involved. It's got two lost sons. So, but I want to remind you what the question was for Jesus, or the comment was that made him begin to tell these parables. Back up in verse 1 and 2, now the tax collectors and sinners were drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and scribes grumbled, saying, "The man receives sinners and eats with them." So then here, he's giving you two, the sheep and the coin. They would be valuable to them. They would recognize this. But this one is going to throw them for a loop when they hear this story. And it might throw us for a loop, too, to hear this story. We might not have a tendency to react like the father in this story. And so it's showing us how different God is than we are and how he receives people. So let's start at verse 11, and it says, "And he said, there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of property that's coming to me.' And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in the country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything." Okay, let's talk about what he's done. This is like horrible. The hearers of this parable, as Jesus was speaking to them, would have thought that this son was doing horrendous things. One, he was asking for his inheritance while his dad still lived. We wouldn't do that. Like, why would you do that? I mean, even us, we wouldn't do that. But they wouldn't do that. And then he took the property that he had been given, and he went to a far country. You know, the Israelites, their country the land was invaluable to them. And he's going to go to another country. And then he spent it in reckless living. He squandered it. And then the famine arose. And then he finds himself feeding pigs. They don't eat pigs. You know, they know this is a dirty animal. And so, how he couldn't have done anything worse. What more could he have done? And yet this is the example that Jesus is giving to them. Then at verse 17, it says, but when he came to himself, when he recognized what he'd been doing, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against you. I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. So in this time, if this really happened, they would expect that they would have a community service where they would consider him dead. As a community, they would consider him dead. They would have a ceremony where he was no longer. They would consider him dead. And that's what they would have expected Jesus to say in this parable, that then, you know, this prodigal son is no longer living as far as we're concerned. But that's not what happened. It's in verse 20, it says, it's still in the middle of 20. It says, but while, let's start at the beginning of 20. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father didn't think he was no longer worthy. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him. And put on a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet and bring the fatted calf and kill it and let's eat and celebrate. For my son, who was dead and is alive again, he was lost and is found, and they begin to celebrate. So let's talk about this. So they should have had a ceremony where he was declared dead. But instead of that, the father tucked in his clothes, revealing his legs, which would be shameful, and ran to his son. He didn't, entertain the idea of a ceremony that would declare him dead. So what his son had done was shameful. But he took the shame of his son on himself. And he ran to him, and he embraced him, and he brought the best to him, and there was a grand celebration. What does that remind you of? It should remind you of Jesus. Because Jesus had done nothing wrong. And yet he took our sins, he took our shame on himself. And he made it possible for us to be united with our Heavenly Father, with God. So what a picture this is, of this kind of love that the Father has for his Son. And it's a picture of the kind of love that he has for you. You know, it's this person, this prodigal son, it was a story, it's a parable. It didn't really happen. But this is God's heart for us. We're like the prodigal son in that we've gone and done and thought and acted, and we have a propensity to do that because we have a sin nature. But God didn't leave us there. He took on our shame and he took on our guilt, and he died for us on the cross. And this is fun because this is Easter's coming up, so we can really celebrate and think about that. But let's go ahead and look at the last verses in this section. And so I got to remind you of the first verse again, because we got to keep who the audience is and why he's telling the story. Now the tax collectors and sinners were drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." Isn't that amazing? He eats with them. He sits down at the table and he eats with them. There's something really special about sitting down and over a meal together and eating. So he's talking about the scribes and Pharisees. And so he goes on and he says in verse 25, "Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound.' But the brother was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, 'Look, these many years I've served you. I've never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friend. But when this son of yours, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed a fattened calf for him.' And he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive, and he was lost and is found.'" So he's speaking to the Pharisees, and the Pharisees are the older brother. The Pharisees have been sticking to the law, following the law as carefully as they could, ensuring that other people were following the law. Yet they were grumbling that Jesus is sitting with sinners and even eating with them. So this is their position as the older brother, and looking at the younger brother who squandered everything and has become filthy. And now, why wasn't there a celebration for me? They're asking. And then when I think about myself and looking at these parables, I can see myself as either one of those sons. I can see myself as the one who went off and did my own thing and forgot to give God any attention. And I could see myself as the Pharisee, as the older brother who's complaining because you're doing this for this person and look at what they've done. But that's not God's heart at all. He wants to welcome both sons into his home, into his heart, into his presence. And so it was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother is dead and is alive, and he was lost and he's found. So we'd be excited about a sheep being found. We'd be excited about a coin being found. But Jesus is really excited about people being found and brought into his family. And it's always with a celebration. He's celebrating over us. And when we come to know him, we come to place our trust in him, the angels celebrate. So there's a party going on in heaven all the time, celebrating as God is reuniting people to himself. I don't know where I am with time.
You're great.
Am I okay?
Yeah. We still have 30 minutes until we need to get our kids. So.
Okay. Well, I won't take all of them. But I do want to just continue to highlight just God's love for you and just your value to him. So the three reasons on your sheet, you might have this. The three reasons you can know that God cares about you. He makes us his daughters. Ephesians 1:5 says, "He predestined us to adoption as sons and daughters through Jesus Christ to himself, according to the good pleasure of his will." It gives him pleasure to bring us into relationship with him. And he predestined us to adoption. Anybody here adopt? Have any of your children been adopted? Yeah. So, but when they came into your family, is there like a question of whether they really belong to me or not? Or did you just like open everything to them?
Well, I feel like it took a little bit of time, but yes, now she's my daughter.
Yeah, absolutely. And she'll inherit whatever you leave, and you're recognized. She's recognized by legally as your daughter, and you know, and she's as close to you as if she were flesh and blood. And God continues to knit you together, and so He gives us an opportunity to be adopted as His sons and daughters, which is pretty special. Pretty special. And it's a forever, never-ending relationship, you know? You're not going to take her back. You know, she's yours. God's not going to take us back and say, oh, what was I thinking when I brought her into my family? No, it's a forever deal. And then He knows our weakness and still loves us. Psalms 103, 13 and 14. Just as the Father has compassion on His children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear Him, for He Himself knows our form, and He is mindful that we are nothing but dust. He knows our weaknesses. He knows us completely, through and through. He made us, so He knows us. And so He's not going to be surprised that, you know, I had this attitude that I need to work through. I mean, He's not going to be surprised when, you know, I come to the end of myself and just give up. You know, He's not going to be surprised when it is difficult for me to forgive someone. He knows. But the sweet thing about the relationship with Him is that He walks me through. He helps me do things that are impossible to do, that I couldn't do without Him. And so He knows where to dust. He still loves me just the same. And He is able to work things out in my life that need to be worked out. He's making me. It's a process. And I want to be making progress towards becoming like Him all the time. Okay, so then the third thing is that He is able to draw. He makes us able, rather, to draw near with confidence. And that's from Hebrews 4:16. Therefore, let's approach the throne with grace and confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace for help in time of need. He's made it possible. You know, when I have issues that I don't know what to do with, I can bring them to Him. And at any moment, I can stop and bring it to Him and find the grace and the mercy that I need for my time of need. And I can do that with confidence because of what Jesus has done for us. So one final reason to consider as we think about God's care for you, Jesus' mission statement. So one of the highlights of this resource, Significant Woman, is you get to write your own personal mission statement. One that's broad enough to be used for all the different seasons of your life, but specific to you, because you're writing it in conjunction with the Lord and with what you've learned about yourself and His mission. And so it's just a sweet little thing to have as you're moving through life and thinking about what do I do next, or these decisions I need to make, or where am I going? If I have a mission statement, it at least helps me kind of know where to target things. So, but Jesus has a mission statement too. And it's in Luke 19:10. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. So when you think about that, Jesus having a mission statement to seek and save that which was lost, makes you think about those parables that we just walked through, and just really the importance of them all the more because He came to seek and save that which was lost. That was His purpose. That's why He came. And that's what He's doing. He's continuing to do it. He says, Jesus is always working. He never stops working, bringing the lost to Himself. And then John 5:17 says, my Father is working until now, and I myself am working. That really encourages me that, you know, I don't know about you, but the world seems way out of control. Like in these last 2 years, it has just felt like one thing after another. And you feel like, okay, we're living under a pandemic. Can't everything stop that's horrible and let us get through the pandemic?
Yeah.
But no, that's not been the case. We've seen so much happen. And it feels kind of, you know, nerve-wracking. It feels kind of scary. But these verses just really encouraging. My Father is working until now, and I am working. He's not stopping until he completes his mission, which is to seek and save the lost. And that's us, and helping us to grow with him. And he uses us to help others come into a relationship with him. So my question for you is, what would be your personal application from what we've talked about, what we've discussed, what we've looked at, as we thought about your value? What would be your personal application? So let me give you a couple of ideas, and we'll see. So one, the first is, your personal application might be to know that you are loved and valuable to the Lord. Maybe you didn't know that before. Maybe you thought that's an idea, a possibility. But do some pondering of these passages that are written on this sheet, of the lost parables. Look at Psalms 139 and let it soak in to you that you are valuable to the Lord. You matter to him. And then, so that's the first way you could make a personal application. A second one is appreciate the great lengths that God has gone to make you his. You know, look back at the parables. Think about what Jesus has done. Those are incredible lengths that God has gone to. That's his own son that he allowed to be sacrificed on the cross for us. He did that because that was the only way you and I were going to be able to enter a relationship with him. But he did it. That's great lengths that God has gone to. So the third personal application might be, seek to help others know that they are valuable and loved by God. You can share the gospel. Share the good news. So the last just statement I want to say is, your value comes from Jesus. He died for you. He bought you. He made you aware of your need for him. He's drawing you to himself. You are of great value. You have great value to him, and you are of great, great worth. So let me pray, and then you guys will tell them what to do. Okay. Father, I do thank you for each woman that is here today. Thank you so much for the